How can we get more comfortable and build a healthy relationship with failure? Not so that we can fail more often, but so when it does happen, we don't get stuck in a rut that can put us into a very dangerous situation. That's what we're going to talk about on this episode of Breakthrough Success. We are joined by an expert guest who had four companies go bankrupt overnight. This landed him $5 million in debt. As you can imagine, this was a very stressful time for our guest where he did have suicidal thoughts, but a big breakthrough for him was realizing that failure is just part of the process, and being able to develop that healthy relationship with failure not only allowed him to get out of those bad thoughts and situations, but since then he's climbed back to create a business and has scaled it to eight figures in less than a year. His life mission is to help people develop a healthy relationship with failure. This is our episode on Breakthrough Success, where we deliver three new episodes each week. Our guest who joins us is none other than Miha, the Fail Coach. Miha, welcome to the show.
Hey, hi, Mark. It's a pleasure to be your guest.
Miha, it's a pleasure to have you on Breakthrough Success. And thank you guys for tuning in to this episode. Whether you're working out right now or driving in a car, I do appreciate you guys choosing Breakthrough Success. And failure is such an interesting topic in entrepreneurship because everyone knows you fail your way to success. You do have to have those failures to reach what it is that you want to achieve. But at the same time, people don't want to become, you know, they don't want to fail at all. So how are you able to build this healthy relationship with failure?
I mean, I see a new trend online lately where a lot of, let's call them gurus, try to make picture it as, you know, you don't, they never failed at anything, you know, everything just went perfectly. And I think a lot of people fall for that, you know, for the shiny object. And later realize that it might not be so. But if you talk with any, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9, whatever figure entrepreneur, and if they are honest, they will tell you that they all had to fail a lot before they reach their successes. And in the beginning, you said maybe not to fail a lot. Well, the thing is, you know, we entrepreneurs, we have one thing in common. We have these crazy big goals and dreams. You know, we want to achieve so much, impact so much, change the world. And so the bigger your dreams, the bigger your goals, the more you will have to be outside of your comfort zone. You know, if you just want a six-figure business, that's not that hard to do. But, you know, if you want to go much above that and impact millions or even the whole planet, then you ain't got, that ain't gonna happen in the comfort zone, you know. You have to be constantly out there. And the more you're out there, that means that you're doing things for the first time. And when you're doing things for the first time, the likelihood is much bigger that you will fail on your first try. And when you do something for the 10th, 20th, 100th time, it becomes your new comfort zone. So doing things for the first time, being out there, likelihood of failure is much bigger than likelihood of success. You have to do a few tries like this, like that, before you figure out what's working. So yes, having a healthy relationship with that is super important, because and the healthy relationship is a logical one. It's a non-emotional one. So basically, two things that will greatly, greatly help you on achieving healthy relationship are mindfulness and emotional intelligence. Now, this might sound, you know, too hippy-dippy, but the thing is, mindfulness really enables you that you are present. So you don't react with an autopilot, because autopilot is not the one that will get you to where you want to be. All your autopilot got you where you are. So if you want to be in a completely different situation, you need to, well, not change the autopilot, but take charge, position yourself in the driver's seat, make conscious decisions along the journey. So mindfulness helps you to step away from the current moment and not react with an autopilot. And then emotional intelligence helps you to react appropriately, because most of the time we react with emotions when logic is needed and with logic when emotions are needed. So emotional intelligence will tell you whether to use the left side or the right side of your brain, your heart, logic, and so on. And like I said, with failure, if we look at it from what it really is you tried something, it didn't work. Now go back to the process, figure out whether you were doing the wrong steps or there were bottlenecks that you didn't saw, eliminate that, and you know, things will change. And now if you go into emotions, that's a whole different thing, because emotions cloud your vision. And you know, then you start, oh, why God, why is this happening to me? You know, I'm a good person and so on, but those things will not yield any results for moving forward. You might find something to blame or somebody to blame, you know, your failures on, but that doesn't help. You know, you need to own your own mistakes and move forward. So the best way to have a healthy relationship with failure is to have a non-emotional relationship. Enough of my monologue. Sorry for such a long one.
No, I mean, that's great, because I mean, there's just so much to go in there. I mean, it is important to not have that entirely autopilot approach if you do want to have the change. And like, there are so many people who they will just repeat the same day every day. If you, you know, wake up, go to work, eat with family, go to bed, a few things in between and repeat. I mean, there are a lot of people who repeat the same day. So that's how you have that autopilot nature, and just to not be emotionally invested in the failures, because I feel like with entrepreneurs, Miha makes a great point. We have such big dreams, such big ambitions, but the bigger we get with our dreams and stuff, like the more mistakes we have to make to get there. It's just part of the process. I think part of the issue with failure is that some people feel like they just have that big one. So like if you do Facebook ads and you spend $10 on an unprofitable ad, you learn from it, you turn it off, no big deal. But I want to explore your case, because you went to $5 million in debt. And I know that was a hard time for you when it actually happened. So I'm wondering if you could share with us, how can we get through something really big like that, staying mentally strong and being able to flip the script?
Yeah, sure. I mean, the thing is, you know, now that I'm looking back, life was constantly trying to give me small lessons in the beginning. And then those lessons became bigger and bigger and bigger. It was just me being overly confident, too cocky, you know, thinking that nothing can happen to me, that, you know, I'm the best entrepreneur there ever was. And it really comes down to not having solid foundations in my businesses at that time. You know, I had no processes, KPIs, benchmarking, and all of that, you know, the boring stuff. For most of us entrepreneurs, we are the creatives, you know, we want to create, we want to be out there, network, talk, so on, inspire. But you know, we hate the boring stuff, and I had none of that in place, so I wasn't able to recognize failure super quickly. You know, unfortunately, Facebook ads, they give you the whole analytics. You know, so after spending $100 or $1,000, you can quickly see, you know, oh, this is not working. You know, there is no positive curve there, so maybe I better stop this, figure out what am I doing wrong, maybe ask somebody for an advice, and that's it. But a lot of things in your business, you have to create those dashboards. Otherwise, nobody will create them for you. And if you don't have them, then of course you can't recognize failure on a smaller scale. So what I'm really always promoting and preaching and when I'm a guest on the podcast is that every business needs solid foundation. Just like you would build a house, you know, first you do some sort of a plan, then you lay down the foundation, then you start building up. So yeah, if we go back, I dropped out of high school, started my entrepreneurial journey when I was 18, and I'll just skip some of the smaller steps in between. But the thing was, at that time, the economic situation was really good. I mean, if you look at what was, I don't know, maybe just 2-3 months ago, now with the coronavirus, people are more, you know, aware that we might be close to some sort of recession. But a few months ago, before the coronavirus, the economy was booming, you know, real estate's rising, shares rising, people spending money rising, all of that going up. So it was quite difficult for, you know, any company to go bankrupt in such a good macroeconomic situation. Now, unfortunately, back then, I didn't saw that it's the whole situation that's good. I was so sure that it's really me, that I'm such a good entrepreneur, and that with good skills in sales, good skills in human psychology, you know, I can wiggle my way around everything and I can achieve everything. So I never really laid down any solid foundations. So my network, my personal network before the grand failure was around 15 million US. Plus I had 4 companies, I had multiple projects, and so on. And then one of those companies were in real estate, the crisis came, the bank backed out, I was in the middle, all my companies were co-signing, I was co-signing for that bank deal. And so literally in one single day, all of that was gone, and I ended up being $5 million in personal debt without any option to do personal bankruptcy. Now, in Europe, it's a little bit different when it comes to personal bankruptcy. I'm from Europe. So because of, you know, being the business owner of failed businesses, not being able to pay paychecks because everything happened overnight, they don't give you the option to perform personal bankruptcy. So I ended up owing the money to not the bank. The bank took everything, and but basically to suppliers, to employees, to taxes, to everything. It felt like I owe money to half of the country. And at first I didn't realize, you know, oh shit, you know, like this happened now. So I was okay. You know, I can figure something out, you know, I can get some other deal going, you know, I was in that rescue mode, you know. And I was still convinced that I can find my way, I can wiggle my way out. But the whole economy situation was turning so bad that no other deals were on the table. And after a few weeks, I really realized like, oh, I can't do this. And then the phone calls from all the people and all the companies turned into almost mafia type calls. You know, so every morning I waked up to calls telling me what they will do to me if I don't pay them the money. Wow. Depression, anxiety, stress, darkness slowly starts creeping into you. You know, you stop seeing any ideas, any light that you can, you know, grab yourself onto. And then, of course, you start asking yourself, you know, like, is it worth going on like this? You know, that's how the idea of suicide started creeping in, and it was more and more inviting because my head was like 24/7, like a nuclear reaction waiting to, you know, just burst open. And all I wanted was some peace and quiet. And the idea of committing suicide was that, you know, like it might hurt for a second, but then bam, everything is gone. And then there's this silence, and I was craving that silence. And then one evening, that was spring 2010, after a few months after the, you know, the collapse. In that time, you know, I just want to make sure to share, it wasn't just the numbers and the companies. I also got divorced. I also lost all my friends that I thought were my friends. from all different, you know, clubs and cigar clubs and rotary clubs and so on, who were the first one never to answer my phone call again. So it was literally, I literally lost everything and ended up being all by myself in that situation. So that was like an added pressure on top of everything. And so one evening, I was smoking a cigarette on the balcony, and I just climbed over the fence. And I remember I was holding myself with my left hand, already inclined over the edge, looking down. And I was looking and thinking, you know, am I going to do this right? You know, because I was only on the fifth floor. So it wasn't really a, you know, no-brainer. I might end up, you know, just on a wheelchair instead of actually committing suicide. And that wasn't really a good option, because then, you know, my whole nuclear reactor in the head would still be there. So, you know, and at that time, I just started yelling at myself. I used a lot of very juicy words, so I'm not going to repeat them here on the podcast. But along the line, you know, you failed, you made so many mistakes and so on. And now, before that moment, it was very easy to blame what happened to me on the whole, you know, crisis, government not responding, this, that. It was so easy to find blame outside of me. But at that moment, it was almost like, you know, these flashes going in my brain of me signing that contract, me deciding to go into that real estate project, me, I don't know, employing that person and so on. And it was for the first time that I really took that ownership of my past mistakes. But that was the aha moment that was so liberating. I mean, yes, it's not easy to, you know, say to yourself, oh, I really messed it up. But then if you say, oh, it was my fault, you can actually do something about it. And you know, it was like, oh, if I made so many mistakes and I was still able to get where I was, if I now do things differently, I can achieve even bigger things. And that was that little ray of light that, you know, started shining again. And it was enough, because, you know, in reality, I was a fighter. I always was a fighter. If I had something to fight for, it was just that in those months of darkness, I lost any light to grab onto. And now I had light again, and I was able to climb back, make a list, start, you know, working on my personal development, on my business development. There was so much I had to change. I really literally had to reinvent myself, rediscover, reinvent myself. But then 3.5 years later, in 2014, like you mentioned, I started a new startup. It was an energy efficiency startup. We were helping big corporations save on how much electricity and gas they're using. I was able to scale that company from zero to multiple eight figures in the first year, multiple nine next year. And then I had a Fortune 100 exit. And I was able to repay past debts, which by that time accumulated to almost 7 million. And then I found myself in this situation where I had the freedom of time, the freedom of money, and most importantly, the freedom of choice. And, you know, of course I went on a vacation, but after a few days, I already took my phone out and I was like, meetup? Where are some meetups here nearby? Because I just had to be, it was just so boring talking to non-entrepreneurial people. I mean, not that I don't like them, but, you know, I can't just talk 24/7 about the weather and the politics. I mean, you know, it was so much more exciting to be surrounded with entrepreneurs, to brainstorm, to exchange ideas and this and that. And, you know, of course, you share your story. And people were asking me, you know, like, oh, wow, what would you do here? How would you approach that? And I just started helping entrepreneurs, mentoring, coaching, advising, and so on. And I basically like kind of fell into the whole coaching business. And that's how the Fail Coach was born. Because in reality, most everything that I've learned and I applied myself and then same things helped my clients was through my failures.
Wow. I mean, for everyone listening, I mean, like, I know you all have different failures and stuff, but like to really be on the brink of like, you know, just like letting go and then just like it all possibly being over. I mean, from being at that point to where Miha is certainly inspirational for people who maybe they feel like they're dealing with a lot of rough stuff right now. I mean, we all have rough stuff. It's just a matter of how we get through it. I know you have that, you know, that big aha moment, which you shared with us. But, you know, it's not like in the retelling, like you hit the fast forward button, you go, you know, 3.5 years later. How did you go from like, you know, that it's my fault, it's that little glimmer of light, to being able to make it a little bigger day by day?
Oh, I mean, you know, it was a fight every single day. Like, that wasn't then, you know, like, oh, now I have an aha moment and now everything is just a smooth ride going forward. No, of course not. I mean, you know, you go into your old mindset, you go into your old ways of thinking. Like, every single day was a fight between, you know, the old Miha and things happening in my life. And you know, the new Miha that I want to create or recreate, and of course there was so much of the inner demons that I was dealing with and all of that. So it wasn't a smooth ride; it was very bumpy road. But you know, little by little, you know, you become stronger, and the demons become weaker. And you're winning more fights and more fights and more fights. And yeah, but I mean, it really, like, that doesn't mean that 3.5 years later, the growth and the work ended. I'm still on that journey of, you know, personal and business development. I do a lot every day to work on that. And I mean, I still have, you know, certain old patterns that I have to fight every single day. But like I said, the more you fight them, the stronger you become, and the weaker they become. And so you're winning more and more fights. But if I've realized anything is that, you know, I wasn't humble. That got me where I was. So now I'm very humble. I realize that the more I know, the less I know. You know, back then I stopped working on myself. I stopped learning, growing. I was just, you know, oh, I'm the best one that ever was. Now I'm far from that thinking, you know, like now for me, one of the most important mindset is ever growing, ever learning mindset, permanent beta. I'm constantly in permanent beta. So it's really the attitude or the way I view things that have changed, and how I do things, and just being grateful for what I already have instead of always going for what I don't have, you know, and being humble, failing fast because of not having emotions associated with failures. It's really those few things that have changed the most, the whole thing. But yeah, it all started with knowing myself, you know, who I really am, like, what do I stand for? What are my values? What are my beliefs? What are my goals? That was a long journey. It took me probably 6 months just to figure out who I really am because of all the influence from the outside world, you know, from the social media and marketing and television and your surrounding, your community of people around you, your loved ones. You know, I was very influenced by all of that in thinking that I know who I am and what I stand for and what my values are and goals and beliefs. But then I realized that none of that is true. And it wasn't like, oh, bam, next day, I know who I am. No, everything was a journey. Even the little things, everything was a journey because there was, you know, so much of the old autopilots, of the old beliefs, of the old habits that were constantly chasing me through this journey.
And that's really insightful because it's not like Miha flips the switch immediately. It's, you know, he's got the old and the new. You've got that wolf analogy. You've got like a wolf that's going to, you know, empower you and a wolf that's going to like kill you off. And the one that wins is the one you feed the most. So you have that analogy, and that is an internal battle that we all have. And it's a matter of, you know, just taking control, letting things like not blaming others, just pointing the finger at you. Because when you point the finger at yourself, you have to reflect. You have to think about how to avoid the mistake. While in Michal's case, like, you know, if you want to say like government, or if you want to say recession or things like that, I mean, again, like a lot of people would really peg it on, you know, bad timing. But when you do point the finger at yourself, even when it looks like you shouldn't, that's when you develop at the high level, to the point where Michal was able to, you know, just have his, you know, incredible rise, but with a humble rise after the fall. So, I mean, your story is like super inspirational. I feel like people who are listening are going to want to learn a lot more about you. So where can we to follow you?
Thank you for your kind words. Well, the easiest thing, because, you know, not everybody likes the same social media platforms. The easiest thing is you just go to Google and you type in Fail Coach. I'm still the only one in the world that calls himself Fail Coach. So then they'll find, you know, my Facebook links, LinkedIn, Instagram, I don't know, YouTube, and so on. And they can just really then follow wherever they want. I try to produce a lot of valuable content on all different platforms. Try to give as much as I can back to the entrepreneurial community. They can go to my website, fail.coach. That's it, just fail.coach. No .com, .net, .something, just fail.coach. Or if they want, I do this leverage of trust technique teaching for free on Facebook in a group called The Leverage of Trust. So facebook.com/groups/ The Leverage of Trust. And they can get there. It's a very interesting technique, how you can get some oxygen money, how you can create some good relationships, and so on, which is the base. You know, when you look at it, what are we doing when we are entrepreneurs vis-a-vis our clients? We're building trust. Now, depending on what you're selling, you know, less or more trust needs to be created. I mean, you know, if you sell an app on App Store for $1, you know, I don't need much trust to buy it. But, you know, the bigger the decision, the more trust I need. So that's a really, really simple, really nice technique, how you can build trust, how you can nurture trust, and how you can leverage that trust to either speed up your business development process, or in times of some needs, even get some oxygen money a bit faster.
All those links mentioned will be in the show notes. We'll also throw a link to my strategy session link for anyone who wants to accelerate their business with podcasting, self-publishing, or YouTube. But Michal, this was such a terrific interview, and it's going to resonate with a lot of people. So I do appreciate you coming on.
Thank you. It was my pleasure. And yeah, I always just hope that, you know, your audience got some value that can help them on their journey.